Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Some items you treasure because of their sentimental value and the people and the experiences that they remind you of, but other collectibles really are a treasure and can be worth quite a bit of money. Larry Mueller here, great to have you along today on the Ideas Net. There are probably a lot more items in your attic whose value is sentimental, is a good way to put it, I think, but once in a while there might be a treasure in there. And today we're going to learn about how an appraisal can help if you ever need to make an insurance claim. Shirley Bauman, our guest today, she's been with us many a time. She's a certified personal property appraiser, a registered Wisconsin auctioneer. She owns Bauman Auction Services and Heirloom Appraisal and Estate Services. And Shirley, always great to see you.
Oh, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Let's talk about it. When we talk about an appraisal, what do we really mean here?
Well, what we're talking about actually, and if we want to look at the definition, it's a opinion of value, and yeah. An opinion is based on research and knowledge and experience, mm-hmm. and that usually comes from a educated, credentialed appraiser.
And the different reasons, I can think of some reasons. I mean, you might just want to know how much something's worth or possibly for insurance, I suppose.
Possibly for insurance. And there's lots of other reasons, you know, equitable distribution among family. And maybe you've got an inheritance or there's estate tax to be paid. But in insurance, it's if someone has suffered a loss when they've gotten a lot of collectibles, antiques, art, those kind of valuable things. And the insurance companies generally put a percentage of the value of your home as what your contents are worth. So if you have a $100,000 home, you get that percentage. If you have a $300,000 home, you get that percentage. But obviously, the dollar value goes up because the assumption is that someone who can afford a $300,000 home would put more in their furnishings, they would have more in quality, and they could probably afford more as well in quantity. So then you get the percentage. Now, if there are special things, maybe you've inherited something, or you took one special trip in your lifetime and brought home a piece of art that you just, you mm-hmm. know, was your lifetime souvenir, and you need to put those in a schedule, which means that your insurance company needs to know they're there and how much is it worth. So to find out how much it's worth, it's not necessarily, well, when we traveled to Italy, 18 years ago, we paid this much. That's not the value because things go up and down.
Could be less.
It could be less or it could be more. The insurance company doesn't necessarily know that on their own, especially when it comes to art and antiques.
Yeah.
And, these appreciable kinds of items. And so that's when you'd want to get an appraiser in to put that value down on paper so that you can properly schedule it on your insurance and then pay to insure that item. And that's, of course, if you don't want to self-insure. Mm-hmm. If the loss of that, I don't know, $10,000 painting would be a problem for you, you would want to insure it.
Yeah. I'm just thinking way back to Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, the basketball player, mm-hmm. whose multi-million-dollar home out in California burned down, and he had millions of dollars worth of artwork, and he had not insured it.
Yeah.
And had to go, and actually had to go back, come out of retirement to go back to work, play.
Keep playing and keep earning money.
Yeah.
Well, there may have been a time when he thought he could self-insure and cover a loss, or he was in such a position he thought nothing would ever happen. And I guess we can't do that because I've seen so many situations, unfortunately, with fire, damage, flood, theft, just breakage. Someone's holding, the maid comes in and is dusting the beautiful vase and it knocks down, I should say vase at that level, right? And it gets broken.
Yeah.
What are you going to do if it's not insured?
Yeah, I know all about that. I have a wood carving, two wood carvings of birds that are worth a fair amount of money, and I really don't have them appraised, and the cat knocked both of them off the mantle.
There you go.
And they're both broken.
Yeah, yeah. That happens easily. The cat, goodness. The kids are roughhousing in the house and bump into things. It's
I'm just sick about it. But,
yeah.
So there you go. Well, are some things harder to appraise than others for, you know?
Well, yeah, certainly they are. One-of-a-kind items can be very difficult to appraise. And what we have to do when we're looking at that, let's say it's an oil painting, oil on canvas. We look at who the artist is and kind of what kind of market value that artist has. And then we try to find similar works of art. Maybe others of his that are his or hers that are in the same genre, same size, that were sold recently, fairly recently. If we can't do that, we look at a similar artist that did something that was on that same line and find those sales records and base it on that. It's got to be logical so that we could defend where we got that value from.
Let's take a look at somebody who's got something appraised, and then for one reason or another, it's stolen or the place burns down. Are they going to, is the owner going to get from the insurance company what the value is?
Well, that depends on a number of things. First of all, they have to know what their insurance policy says. And that is when you're securing your insurance, you want to know. And, of course, you do have it scheduled. You have the appraisal. Then the insurance company will look at how recent is the appraisal. And what they like to see is something that's about 5 to 7 years.
Okay.
Beyond that, it gets pretty old and
pretty
out of
dicey.
Date. And then it's questionable, and they might call an appraiser at that time to update it. But it's really better if you have it there before. And here's the reason. If you have the appraisal before, the appraiser should document the condition of the item, if it's been repaired, if there's any kind of a defect or a condition issue problem. You've got the size, you've got all the details, you've got photographs of it. And then you've also got the value. If we do it, and we can do this as a hypothetical appraisal after the problem happened, but then the insurance company is going to say, no, I don't think a 200-year-old piece of paper could have been in perfect condition. We'll make some assumptions here.
Mm.
And they start asking questions, and you don't have the answers to all the questions because, gee, you just can't remember it all. What size was this item? Well, about so-and-so. And so there's a lot of maybes in there.
Yeah.
And then they will come to a number, which probably is not what you get if you'd had an up-to-date appraisal beforehand.
And speaking of that, how do you recommend people find a reputable appraiser with expertise in the items you want?
There are a number of ways to do it. There are three major appraisal organizations: the International Society of Appraisers, which is the one I belong to, the American Society of Appraisers, and the Appraisers Association of America. And they all have websites, and each one of those websites has Find an Appraiser button. And so you can search on those sites. Now, if you're in an area where nothing comes up, then you might want to go to your closest museums. If it's an art museum or other kind of museum that has artifacts and such, then you ask them if there are appraisers in the area. And there are some auctioneers who are also appraisers and trained as appraisers.
And that's like you. I am also
an auctioneer, right?
Yeah.
And there are others in Wisconsin. So you can find possibly some of them that way as well.
Mike in Milwaukee has a question that really relates to our conversation here. And
I have no sound.
Oh, and Shirley's having a little problem with her headsets there. Shirley, why don't we try a different headset here, and we'll see what we've got. We'll see what we've got here. Shirley Bauman, our guest today, and she is a certified personal property appraiser, talking with her about, obviously, about appraising for insurance purposes. You can join in the conversation today. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@WPR.org, or you can post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. And we're going to try and get this rectified here. And Shirley, I don't know if I'm trying to do some things here, but I'm not giving you any help here. So hang on there, Mike and Lee and Dennis and Nick. I'm sure we're going to get this resolved here pretty quickly. Unfortunately, it's not resolved yet. So let's continue to talk here a little bit about the appraisal process. And I think we have it resolved. So let's take that call from Mike in Milwaukee. Mike, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. Thank you. I just had a question for your guest. I had purchased some rugs, about five Persian rugs from I had a trip to Tehran. And this was about 8 years ago, before the sanctions happened with Iran. And we had purchased them, my wife and I, for right around $6,000 to $7,000 for all five. We had them cleaned recently, and the person that was doing it was a reputable dealer of those items and offered us a substantial amount. We didn't sell them, but my insurance adjuster had made the call to see if I could put them on a rider for my homeowner's policy, and I maybe have to check out some of the appraising suggestions that you had, but you know they were, some of them were in the value of maybe about $8,000 a piece. So, do I pay an extra premium per month for if I wanted to insure something like that for $45,000 for the set of rugs? And I know that the value had gone up just because the sanctions against Iran, and then do values fluctuate based on scarcity or sure. rarity, and I'm just sure. wondering, do I need to pay an extra? I don't
premium.
Know how to go about
mm-hmm.
that.
Yeah,
yes, you'll want to talk to your insurance agent about that first, and tell them what your intentions are, and you will pay an extra premium, and you can give them an estimate. If my rugs are worth $8,000 or whatever they are, or what you assume they are, how much will my premium go up? And they can pretty much tell you that. And give you a good estimate. And then you would want to find an appraiser and get them appraised and get a written document that says, according to this date, the effective date of the appraisal, these rugs are worth such and such. And then get that updated maybe every 5 to 7 years. And the update will not cost as much. The updated appraisal shouldn't cost as much because you've already got the measurements there. You've got the details. What you'd like is to have the appraiser come back, take a look at it to see if the condition has changed. You know, maybe you've had it on the floor and it wore or something. So they do want to see it again. And then they'll update that value for you so you can keep that properly insured.
Thanks very much for that call. Shirley Bauman, our guest. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Lee and Tomahawk in Michigan, actually. Thank you for waiting. Hi.
Hey, how you doing?
Great. Appreciate the call. What can we do for you?
Yeah, I just got a question. I've never had this appraised, but my house, which is built in 1884, my father had it before me. It's always been in our family, and about 30 years ago, he found a toy gun in the wall when he was tearing a wall out, doing some remodeling, and I want to say die cast, but it's not die cast, because they didn't make die cast back then. The walls have never been tore out in that area, so he knew it had to be from way back then when the house was built, but it's about 6 inches long. It was built for a kid, and it's got one moving part, which is the trigger and the hammer, and it's a cap gun, and it has 1884 raised on the handle grip.
Okay.
It's metal. It's all metal. It's in perfect condition. It's doesn't got a rust spot on it. It works perfectly, and I keep it in a safe. And it's kind of like a dark brown.
Okay. It just so happens that I recently conducted an estate sale, and the deceased there had been a collector of toy guns and had over 100 of them in his collection at the house. And some of them, a few of them, were back to the Civil War era. So we're talking about some nice old ones. And the oldest ones in that collection were about in the $75 and $100 range. I can't say exactly where yours is. Of course, if it would happen to have a maker's name or something like that, or something really unusual about it, it could go
up. Yeah, I believe it does. I actually believe it does, but it's, I'm on the road right now driving a semi-truck. I'm actually pulled. I just pulled over, but so I can't actually take it out and totally describe it.
Right. Yeah. My guess is it could be somewhere around, you said it was, seemed in perfect condition, somewhere around maybe between 75 to 100 or so.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. Well, hey, I appreciate it. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks a lot for calling. Dennis and Ripon, your turn. Hi, Dennis.
Hi. I have what I believe is a brass radiator cap from a car made by the Crit Motor Car Company in Detroit. They went out of business, I believe, shortly after World War One. It has a swastika on the top and the letters KRIT for Crit Motor Car Company. And I just wonder if this is worth being appraised.
This was pre-Nazi.
Right, right. And in those days, the swastika meant good luck, as you said. It was. It changed meanings after the war, but that's what it was back in the early 1900s and before. A car radiator cap like that would probably be of interest, certainly to automobile collectors, automobilia collectors, the memorabilia related to the autos. Especially since it's a now defunct company, the swastika and the name of the company on it, and being brass rather than just, say, tin or other kind of metal. I don't know off the top of my head exactly what that would be and how rare it would be and how many collectors are after something with that name on. So I honestly can't tell you a number off the top of my head. But I would say it certainly is collectible. As far as if you want to put in it, make an investment in an appraisal, you might do some searching on Google for memorabilia related to the Crit Auto Company, and see if they're going. You know what that's they're going for. And even if you don't see a radiator cap per se, if you see some other things, and then you can compare them to say Ford or other companies that are still around and see if they've gone much higher than the others because it's a defunct company, then you could assume that the radiator cap would probably be higher than other radiator caps, too.
Okay.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I found this in a farm field back in the mid-60s and took it home. My dad cleaned it up and used it for an ashtray for years.
Oh, my goodness.
Unfortunately, that's probably not the best thing I could have done, but it still, again, may have some value because obviously it's rare, but rare doesn't always equate to high value.
Good luck. Thanks a lot, Dennis, for calling. You can join in, too, by the way, question or comment for Shirley Bauman. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@WPR.org, or you can post on our Facebook page. And if you have a photo, post it up on the Facebook page, photo of something that you want to have us look at. You can certainly do that. And just go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page for that. Bill and Nina, your turn. Hi, Bill.
Hi. And my question is about appraising older cars. I have three automobiles that are ranging from 21 years to 10 years old. And so I don't think people appraise cars very often if they're not collectibles. These are not. But I'm concerned about insurance coverage. Mm-hmm. The cars are in very good condition, so I'm wondering if I could protect my value in the car in the event of any future insurance claim if I had them appraised before anything happened to them?
I would think that would be a good idea, and I'd run that question past your insurance agent to make sure before you make an investment in the appraisal. But I think they will probably say, yes, that would be a good idea. And where I think you would go for an appraiser like that is look for a very active auctioneer in the area, someone mm-hmm. who is, you know, regularly auctions vehicles. And they can probably do that appraisal for you.
Very good.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. And on to Nick in Madison. Nick, your turn. Hi.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for the show. So I have a large collection of Currier and Ives dishes, three full sets that my mother collected over the years in order to provide a set for my sister, myself, and another family member. And she never kept a ledger of how much she paid for each piece. And I guess we've kind of always wondered what the value or possible value of these could be.
Mm-hmm. And they're blue and white?
They are.
Yes. These are dishes that are not real hard to come by. And the interesting thing is they probably will insure for more than you can ever sell them for. And most things do, but especially dinnerware, China's porcelains have come to that point. There's a couple things you can do. You could go to the antique shops and find out what those dishes are selling for now. And that gives you kind of a fair market value. But if you're looking for an insurance value, you would want to look on internet sites and different places. And the actual shop prices apply here too. But what is it going to cost to replace those? If you can buy the gravy boat, how much is it going to cost you? Is it going to cost you $25 or is it going to cost you $75? And you can see that by looking at, you know, even there are sites on the internet like replacementslimited.com is probably the highest price that you would pay for those dishes because their customer is the person who has grandma's dishes and will replace that gravy boat at any price because they want the complete set. So you can use that and the information, but if you're doing it yourself, you're going to have to really document thoroughly where you found that information. And that's what basically an appraiser does. And so talk to your insurance agent first. Because it's not a particularly rare item, you can still find those quite frequently in the antique shops. You should have no problem with setting a value.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Very well.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Shirley Bauman, our guest, certified personal property appraiser, registered Wisconsin auctioneer. And I believe we have your sites up on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. I know there were some people who wondered how to get a hold of you by phone, and you have obviously a phone number.
I have a phone number. It's 608-241-2615.
608-241-2615. Okay. There we have it. And we'll probably post that up, too, so people have that. But for those who aren't online, there's the number, 241-2615. Cheryl in Cecil, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hello there.
What can we do for you?
Thanks. I'm kind of caretaker in charge of a small art collection at an art center in Shawano. And what it is collected paintings from artists for the last, maybe 50 years. And it's mostly regional art. And we have so many that we don't have prices on, and we'd like to insure the collection. And I've gone online, and it's very difficult to find regional art appraisers.
It is because, there's a lot of reasons, because some of them have become not very well known, and they're difficult to find sales values for because they don't particularly have a following that remained. There's a couple things to do. First of all, your question here that I see was had how to get it authenticated and appraised. And those are really two different things. Authentication is not appraisal. That's determining if it really is by whose signature on it or who it is done by. And what I would do, I would recommend you contact the Wisconsin Art Museum, Museum of Wisconsin Art in West Bend.
Oh, okay.
And talk to them. I know they have quite a lot of regional art as well. And just find out how they can help or how they've authenticated some of the things they might not have had information on. But they're very helpful, and I would encourage you to talk to them. And then once you have them authenticated, then you call in the appraiser to give you the values. And then that would be, you know, at that point we make the assumption. And even if it isn't a well-known or listed artist, as we call someone who has a following and a sales record on them, I've done a lot of things on, say, the Wisconsin regional artists from the CCC era and that kind of thing. And so there is information we can find on them. And there's a lot of families that have private collections from their relative who was one of those artists. And so we do have some information that we could put together. So you'll want to find an art appraiser, but they don't necessarily have to say that they're just a regional appraiser.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Cheryl, for calling. Great advice there. Lori in Wauwatosa, hello.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My husband's aunt moved into a cottage occupied at one time by Edith Cockcroft. And there are quite a few pieces of her pottery, complete sets of her pottery, left behind, as well as a painting. And we are under the assumption that the painting was also done by her, as the style is very similar to all of her other works. However, it's hard to read the signature on it. So if we're operating under the assumption that it is her work, we're just wondering what a possible value of that painting might be. It's about 30 inches by 30 inches.
I have to tell you, I am not familiar with Edith Cockcroft. Could you enlighten us a little bit?
Well, she was an artist in New York, and her paintings are fairly well known in certain circles. And I do know that recently a cache of her paintings was discovered, so they went immediately on auction. Mm-hmm. So, you know, in terms of her background, I don't know a whole lot about it. It was a while ago that we inherited the painting, so I haven't read recently about her history.
Okay. Well, here's how you do it, since I have never researched her, not unfamiliar. Mm-hmm. What we do is look at those auction results. You said that recently they went up for auction. Search for those results. And if you can't find it, if you know the auction house that handled the auction, that would be the place to start. And if they don't have, most of them have databases on their websites that you can get to, and all you have to do very often is just sign in and not pay anything. Now, there are other websites that have databases of auction records that you do have to pay for to get those records.
Yes.
But you can often get just a one-day subscription.
Okay.
So that if you look ahead of time and they say they have her records, records for her sales, then you could maybe just invest one day, maybe I know one of them is about $13, $14, maybe one would be about $20, and that would give you current sale prices. But remember, you want to look at something that's a similar genre, same medium, if it's oil on canvas or if it's a watercolor, that kind of thing, and as close to the date as possible in the sale to give you a value. And again, that would tell you if you wanted to insure it and go further and get an official appraisal.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
And you might also, Judith was passing some information on, you might want to talked to the Caldwell Gallery in Hudson.
Mm-hmm.
They have apparently a lot of info on Edith Cockcroft online.
Yes, I have found that as well.
Yeah, okay. Very good. Thank you.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Appreciate the call. You can join in, too. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@WPR.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. And Chris in Wales, it is your turn. Hi, Chris.
Oh, good morning, Shirley, Larry. I got a question about a foot-operated pedaled sewing machine. This one is called the Free, F-R-E-E, and I know they originally were from Illinois. I don't know anything else about it. I went to the University of Wisconsin-La Crosse and purchased it back then. That was back in 1975 from a very elderly woman at the time. It was her personal machine. And I was wondering, everything on it is just gorgeous. She has the original, a tin box that says attachments and fancy writing on it with the attachments in it, old buttons and everything else in there. Do those things have any value if they're in really excellent condition anymore, those kind of machines?
Well, it's an interesting question. I hear about these machines very often. I think they were built to last forever, and they do.
They do.
They do, and as a result, they aren't particularly valuable around here. The machine itself, if it's a very nice, ornate case, like a nice oak case with lots of carving and things, you might go as much as $100. Most of them I see are around in the $50, $60 range. Okay. Now, the attachments you have, or not necessarily the attachments, the buttons and the accessories you have are possible to go for more than that sewing machine.
Yes, they are. They're like things to be able to, you put the little symbol of thread in there.
Mm-hmm.
It's a metal casing. She's got some really weird attachments. I don't think they're attachments. I don't know what they are. I don't know what to do with them. They're all original. They're in there. They sit in.
Right.
And like I say, the case itself is quite neat. It's metal, but it's painted on there real fancy, and it's, you know, the work.
Uh-huh.
Wow.
Yeah. That case in itself might not be a lot, but the things that we're looking at, people who collect sewing items, they like the sewing birds that you put the fabric in and you have a turn crank on it and it pinches the fabric so you have an extra hand like to hold your fabrics out while you're doing a hem or something. The old gold thimbles and things like that. Some of the figural tape measures that when they're in place, they look like, oh, I don't know, a little bear or a girl or something of that nature. Some of those kinds of things are what the collectors, and really special buttons, are what the collectors are after. If you've got a big round brass button with a scarab on it from about the Civil War period, that could bring several $100. So those things are really more valuable. And just as a side note, I was once called in to do a furniture appraisal on a dining room set for an estate. And that set just sparkled, but it was very common. And when I looked in the tin of buttons they were going to give to Goodwill, I found things that were more valuable than the dining room set.
Oh, boy.
So that could be more valuable than actually the sewing machine.
Oh, that's a lot of information. I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Oh, my goodness. David in Freeport, Illinois. Thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I'm looking at a powder horn that has been passed down through the family, and I'm wondering about value for insurance purposes. I can describe what's been scratched on the outside of this powder horn, if it would help. It's got a date of 1758. It's got a name of Ethan Pope, his horn, Fort George, November, M-E-S-L. It's got a regiment, I guess a regiment, a lineup of soldiers carrying flintlock rifles, And the leader has got a sword from his belt, and there's some tall ships and other things. It's in pretty good shape. However, there is one bad ding on it. The head looks to me like took a bad rub sometime.
Okay.
Okay, it sounds like you have something special, and I would think that there are any number of military collectors that would love that. And even though you're planning to keep it in the family, that's what we base value on. What might someone pay for that? And fair market value is actually the cost of what it takes to exchange an item such as that between a willing buyer and a willing seller, neither having compulsion to buy or sell, and both having the pertinent information and facts about the piece. So that's right. Fair market value, and that's but what we're looking at here to insure it is actually insurance value, which means what would it cost you to replace that? And there we have to look at, again, sales records. What are those things going for? If you had to go either to a military sales, a shop, say an antique shop that sold Militariana, or if you had to go to auction to buy that, what would be all the costs that was involved in that? And that's how to determine it. I can't tell you the number right off, but I know that the early date in the 1750s is very desirable because it's just that early.
It's just that early, yeah.
And, of course, when you say a ding on it, I don't know really how much that affects value, how much of a ding it is, so to speak,
right.
For
well,
damage.
Yeah.
You know?
I don't have the ability to take a photo and pass it on to you, so I'm just got a guess on it. But 20 years ago, I had taken it to a sports show. It was a auction-type sports show, and there was a dealer there, but I think it was a dealer there, that wanted to sell it for me. And at that time, he was talking $11,000, and that was 30 years ago.
Yeah.
I know it's such a unusual piece. There's not too many with a record of sales out there.
Right,
yeah, that's
right.
The thing.
But a professional does have access to information that the general public wouldn't, in terms of being subscribers to certain databases that, I mean, they cost hundreds of dollars for us to belong, you know, to use that, and then the average person wouldn't just pay that for one, you know, to look up, maybe they'd find one item. So we do have some access to that, plus, like through my professional organization, we have a lot of some of the premier appraisers in the country who really specialize in those items that we can consult with as well. And so there are opportunities to find information that might not just be available to the general public. Now, if it was at that price 30 years ago, it doesn't automatically mean that it has increased in value because it's a market. Things go up and down. At that point, was the market at a high or a low for this kind of thing compared to what it is now? Right now, people are very much more interested in collecting the Civil War things.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't mean that something like yours hasn't gone up. I just am not sure about that. I haven't researched powder horns for a while. But that it certainly, to me, it feels like something that you probably would want to get looked at and insured.
Yeah, good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. Shirley Bauman, our guest today, certified personal property appraiser, owns Bauman Auction Services and also Heirloom Appraisal and Estate Services. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. So happy to have you with us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio as we talk about appraisals and appraisals for insurance purposes with our guest Shirley Bauman of Bauman Auction Services and Heirloom Appraisal and Estate Services. So happy to have her with us as well. And we have on Facebook, there's a wonderful photo and story associated with it from Tiffany, who says, good morning. First of all, I love the show. Secondly, I have a vintage necklace, and she's got a photo of it. It's beautiful, a necklace. It's from the 60s or 70s. It's sterling silver with blue enameled GSA and stamped Gucci, Italy, 925. Measures 34 inches, weighs 76.5 grams. Excellent condition. Wondering about its possible value. And she has a couple of really nice photos to go along with it. What do you think, Shirley?
Well, I think it's a very nice piece, as you're talking about it. And she does show the markings on it. And just to share, the 925 on that necklace means it's 92.5% silver, which means that's the sterling standard in the United States. So when you see 925, that means it's sterling. Now, sometimes you'll see it written out as sterling, but a lot of times we see that 925. So just so you know what that means. And then, of course, we've got the markings on there as well, and it's Italian, as you would think, with Gucci. And necklaces like that are a little bit hard for me to value, but I think we're looking in approximately the range of $500 to $700, perhaps. And it would, you know, I wouldn't, you can't take my on the radio number here for an insurance value, because we'd need to look at it and things. But with the markings that clear, I think you have something in approximately that range. And of course, I don't know the size of it or the weight. When we're doing silver, we like to weigh them.
Oh, the silver part of it. Yeah, right. She says it's 34 inches and 34 it weighs inches. 75.
Oh, yeah, you do have that. Well, you can look at the grams and today's silver spot price and multiply that out. And there you're going to have a minimum value, just the intrinsic value. But then you're going to add on beyond that the fact that it's Gucci, a prominent designer name, and its aesthetic value. So that's how we find it. But I can't tell you exactly what it is here on the air without going through that kind of research.
Really is pretty.
It's beautiful.
Yeah,
really. I'd love to wear it.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Well, let's see. We've got David in New Richmond up next with a question. Hi, David.
Hi, how are you guys doing?
Great. Appreciate the call.
Hey, I was wondering, I have a knife that was made by my uncle, Kenneth Alden, back about 25 years ago. I've looked for him on the internet, and I've never found anything that he's ever made. He was one of the first Americans to go to Japan and win an award, and he had taken this knife with him to help. And I think he was a line maker, if I remember correctly, but he has passed on now. And I was just wondering, how do you find the value of something like that?
Well, what you want to do is take a look at similar knives, knives that were made in that era that your uncle was working, and see if they look the same. And if they do, that's where you're going to place your value. What did they sell for? Because you aren't finding any sales records for any work of your uncle's. That's about the best you can do when you don't have that kind of information. See if you can find another award-winning knife maker that does have a sales record.
Okay.
All right. Good luck. Thanks. Another David, this one from Durand. Hi, David.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
I'm wondering, how do reputable appraisers charge? Do they do it by the hour? Or I heard sometimes they do it by percentage of the value, which kind of sounds strange to me. If they up their appraisal, they can make more money. I'd like to have a comment about that.
Well, you're exactly right. And that's part of the ethics that goes along with appraisals and that those of us in professional associations need to abide by. And we do normally either set a flat fee, say I will do this appraisal for X dollars, or the hourly, which is the way I do mine. And you're absolutely right that there's potential for conflict of interest. And, you know, an appraisal is an educated opinion. And we get to the point where, we're around this price, you know, maybe if it's you know, $10 more, will anybody know? But so, and then you do that with the entire house full. I mean, that's exactly the appearance of conflict of interest that we're trying to avoid. So it should be hourly or flat fee.
Well, thank you. I haven't heard about the flat fee, but I'd like to know an appraiser who's certified or whatever should also be able to write everything down and document it for insurance purposes or whatever. Is that correct?
That's
all
correct.
Within the...
Okay. We can also do verbal approximations of value and appraisals, like a family inherits grandma's things and they just want to know if it has any value. They're not necessarily looking to insure it, but they're looking to see if there is anything that they should look further. So we can come in and give them a verbal approximation at that point, but it wouldn't be used for the official purposes. If they did owe estate tax or they did want to insure it, then we'd need to go further and do the official research and report writing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yep. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. An interesting photo up on our Facebook page from Sally, who's got a photo here, and she says, is this a battery? And it's Ford. It's a box.
It's Ford, and it's a box, and I'm not much of a car person.
It does look like battery terminals on the coming out the side.
It does look like it, and it could very well be. Maybe somebody who's, you know, looking on the Facebook page would know for sure what we have, but I think it is. And as far as value, I'm not certain. Obviously, it would come out of a very early car, and I've seen some Model A and T mm-hmm. accessories or parts, you know, go for pretty good prices if they can still be used, but I doubt a battery at that period could be used anymore.
It doesn't look like it would be one that could be used, although the box looks...
The box looks... And it's interesting.
Looks
pretty good. Yeah, yeah. And it might be able to be put together some way. And people who collect cars just like those kinds of things, you know? Some people pick up things like that and think they're interesting accessories for the man cave.
Yes, you're exactly right. And if somebody wants to take a look or thinks, you know, if you're a car, kind of a car nut or an old car nut, you want to take a look at it, go to our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. And sort of in the center of the page, right under a photo of some candlesticks, I believe, there's a comment section. You click on the comment section and you'll get some photos, including the one of what we're pretty sure is a battery. There's also another one. Oh, this looks like one of these machines from Tony back in the day. I don't know how far back, but those were weight reduction machines, if I'm not mistaken. I think I saw one of those on another antique show.
Uh-huh.
And it actually worked, and the guy turned it on and jiggled himself. It's you stand on something and it looks to be in pretty good condition.
All right. And those are fun to look at, and I've seen some of those too, and it's even funnier to watch somebody use it. And they don't have a lot of value anymore. They're kind of considered in the almost hoax.
Yeah.
Medical, if you will,
yeah.
Category. And they're so big, so finding a place to put them just for the fun is not something a lot of people look for. But still, this looks very interesting. It looks to be in good condition, and it might go into maybe a couple $100 value.
If you maybe there's somebody that's got an exercise business, you know, you might want something like that as a kind of not for use, but
right.
as a decoration or something to have in your business.
Yeah. Right.
It looks pretty cool.
If you got an exercise studio, you might want that as fun.
As a fun thing, for sure. John in Fall River, hi, thank you for calling.
Yes, I've got a really old bicycle. It's called the Tribune Blue Streak from 1899. And Mile a Minute Murphy set a world record of 60 miles an hour behind a train. And it's got wood rims on it. It's got the original leather pouch with some tools in it. It's in pretty decent shape for $18.99.
Wow.
They are still around, and they were actually quite a modern-looking bicycle for its day.
Right, and lightweight.
I don't know a lot about the value of them, I'm sorry to say, but I would have to do some research on that. And what you might look at, if you have access to the internet, is sales records. And if it's easy, actually, to look at the sold values on eBay by going to advanced search and then looking under sold listings.
So go there and give that a try, because it could be worth some money for sure. Shirley Bauman, yeah, really?
Yes,
yeah.
I think so.
Yeah, Shirley is owner of Bauman Auction Services. She'll be with us right up till 12:30. Quick look at the news, and then we'll be back. We have her site up on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show, both of those sites. As well, if you want to contact her by phone, the other way to do it is by phoning at 608 area code. Number is 241-2615, 241-2615. Certainly great to have her. She comes by every so often. We always have a good time. There's always lots of things, aren't there, Shirley?
Oh, there are. Some things I might never have heard of.
Well, Dana in Edgerton has something for you. So let's go there. Dana? Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
My brother has a painting by our great uncle, Enoch Reindahl. And I was wondering if she had heard of Enoch and whether or not it might be worth anything.
Sure. Enoch Reindahl is from Stoughton, or was from Stoughton, and was a very well-known artist. And his main art was carving decoys.
Right.
And his decoys can go for a lot of money. I know that in 2008, there was a pair that auctioned for over $74,000.
Oh!
Yep.
So his work is quite sought after there. Now, the paintings, not quite so much in value. However, there was one I know of auctioned in the area, locally here, in 2001, and it was of a blue jay. And he did wildlife art. And that one went for about $800. Now, I'm not sure. I think his market has gone up a little bit since then. So I think you probably do have something from value, certainly knowing who it's from. What is the subject of your painting?
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, it's not so much a wildlife scene. It's a more of a pastoral kind of scene with cows.
Okay. That may not be quite as valuable because he's known for the wildlife, the ducks and that kind of thing, both as a carver and as a painter. But I think I can't give you an exact value on it, but I do certainly think it's worth looking into. And I don't know if you were listening the whole time, but he's a Wisconsin artist, and there may be some things that the Museum of Wisconsin Art in West Bend can tell you.
Okay.
As well.
The Museum of Wisconsin Art, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, good. Good luck, Dana. Thank you. Jack in Mauston, it's your turn. Hi, Jack.
Hi, how are you doing?
Great, appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
Well, I've got some furniture that was my great-great-grandfather and mother. It came out of Chicago. He was a cheesemaker. There's a couch, a captain's chair, a love seat. Now, my dad says the thing is too small to make love on.
but do we know the period or the years roughly?
Well, it would be before the turn of the century, so it's in the 1800s somewhere.
Okay.
That sounds to me like a Victorian parlor set. It's where the homeowners would receive their guests. Excuse me. My voice.
Okay. Yep. And there's I believe, two other just single chairs that don't have arms on them.
Right. No. And that's where the guests would come and they'd visit, have their tea, whatever. Unfortunately, Victorian items have fallen out of favor currently. You know, people are much more interested in mid-century modern than Victorian these days. So the Victorian furnishings are actually quite hard to sell, and even if you weren't planning to sell them, that's what we base the value on. And I've sold those kind of small love seats, not even very recently, but maybe a year or two ago at least, for maybe a couple, $200 to $400, depending on how special they are, what the wood is, how the carving is, what it looks like, you know, partly the aesthetics. Rosewood always brings more than oak or walnut. And the whole set, you know, it's hard to say, but it's probably going to be under, maybe under $800 even. And if it's really special, not much more than $1,000.
Yeah.
And that's if you can find the buyer for it.
Yeah, you got to find a buyer.
Yeah.
There you go. There. Good luck, Jack. Thanks for calling. Nick in Green Bay, it's your turn. Hi, Nick.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Cool day in Green Bay. But my question for you is, I went to a thrift store, and I found this teddy bear. And I'm usually not a teddy bear person, but this guy is really awesome. He's in full Air Force gear. He's got, like, real military pins on him. And around his neck, he's got a dog tag. And I talked to my father-in-law that's in the Air Force, and he said it's a real dog tag. It's got this guy's, like, name, social security number, his blood type, his religion, everything. And he's about 2 feet tall. I was wondering if there's any value to that. It's a really neat thing. I mean, I'm not going to sell him or anything. I just never seen it before. My wife was in the Air Force. She was born in Guam. And since she's heard of him, she just never seen him before in real life.
Huh.
Okay. Well, it sounds much more like a more modern collectible than an antique item.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And the key to valuing it is looking to see if you can find a maker's name on it.
What was the name of the company that made the teddy bear?
Bear Forces of America.
Okay. I don't know that company offhand, but I'm sure it's one of the more modern collectibles company. The thing with those modern collectibles is they don't really appreciate in value, at least not for a long time.
Okay.
The reason being, the modern ones, they usually make so many of them. They might say limited edition bear, but they don't tell you how many editions they made.
Yeah.
So there could be so many out there at this point, but maybe in another generation, or who knows, another century, it might end up being that that's one of the few remaining, because the others they didn't collect. So at this point, I think it's probably a fairly minimal value. Kind of a, you know, decor value rather than collectible value, but that should be fairly easy to look up on the internet, because it's a more modern collectible.
Yeah.
There you go. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Nick, for calling. Appreciate it. And Gail in Fish Creek. Hi, thank you for calling.
Well, hi. Your shows are always so great. Such a nice variety. I thought I'd call because you had that caller that was asking about that vibration belt.
Yeah.
A machine that was good for taking the fat off the body. That prototype was, like, very early. But now they have equipment that actually does that on a large scale for the body, and it's called zero gravity. And what it does is it's like resistance training for the entire body, for all the muscles, because it'll help to massage fat out of the muscles so the bodies become stronger and leaner. Madonna owns one, and the Olympic teams in Germany and Russia have been using them for like 2 decades or more.
Huh.
So it's like he's got this really cool, you know, archaic prototype, but the concept is there, and they use this for resistance training too. So when you look at the Russians, they're stronger, but they look puny. That's the reason.
Well, Gail, interesting information. I did not know that that there were that kind of machines out there that actually barely work. Well, this one, the prototype, though, I don't think really did work, but it's interesting to know. Thanks. Thank you for calling. Appreciate it. Dan in Cameron has something. Hi, Dan.
Hi, how you doing?
Great.
I'm calling about the thing for the Model A that you thought was a battery.
Yeah.
I've seen a lot of them, and I can't see it. I'm on the road right now, but I'm thinking it's probably 2 inches wide and 5 inches across and about 8 or 9 inches high with two steel screw posts on the top.
Actually, it's stuff coming out the side. It looks like a wood box.
If it's turned.
Okay, yeah, it would be a wood box. It's a coil for Model A, most likely.
Oh, a coil.
Okay.
Yeah. It's a lot smaller than a battery would be, and they don't have a whole lot of value. Curiosity value, $5 or $10, and if it works really good, which is doubtful, it might be worth $25.
All right. You know, that's
very likely because it looked flat. Yeah. You know, like it could have been a flatter box. And
we didn't have anything to go by in terms of size, but I'll bet you that's pretty close.
It's thin, though, isn't it? It's only about 2 inches high and five inches across and then about 9 inches long.
Yeah. It's hard to say for sure from the picture.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm trying to find the picture.
Well, if it's wood cased, it's the coil.
Okay, it's wood case. That's
all
for
right,
sure.
That's,
all right, thanks, Dan. Thank you for calling. See, if I knew somebody would probably call up and help us out there. Bob and Holman, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Good to talk to you, Larry. I appreciate your show as always.
Thank you.
I've got some Soviet-era bronze sculptures. One or two of them are one of a kind in the world, and the other three are two of a kind in the world, and they come from about 1985. They were done specifically, one was done for me, or two were done for me, and then another person got a couple of them. I just want to know where to go to get a good appraisal.
And you're in Holman.
Holman, Wisconsin.
Yeah, it's the Soviet era. I used to travel back and forth there quite a bit.
Okay. So you know who the artist is, which is good information.
I know who the artists are, and I know where they are at, or at least where one of them is at now.
I would look on those appraisal sites, if you were listening earlier, for the International Society of Appraisers.
The International Society. Okay, I guess I didn't catch that one.
Association.
Okay.
Of, what did I say? The American Society of Appraisers and the Appraisal Association.
Those are the three.
Of ASA, Appraisal Association of America, AAA, and then the ISA. And look for an appraiser. And some of them will say what they specialize in. And, you know, you should be able to find somebody not too far. And I think they would definitely be worth getting those valued and insured.
Thank you very much. Sure. I appreciate that.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Well, here's Jenny has got a kind of an interesting story for us on Facebook. This is a music box picture album my husband put money down on back in the 70s in Albuquerque, New Mexico, at an antique store. Before he could come and pick it up as a present to his girlfriend, the Smithsonian had stopped by and wanted to buy it. So apparently he did hang on to it, and the Smithsonian didn't get it. And that's kind of a cool story. And, of course, he doesn't know for sure that the Smithsonian stopped by to buy it.
You never know what you're told at a place like that and when you're shopping. But there could be a couple of things. First, they say it's a photo album. They don't tell us if there are photos in it. There may have been a very interesting photo in there that they wanted rather than just the album. Or the, and they didn't want to kind of tip their hand to say what they were really after. But if there were photos in it, that might have really been what they were after as well. But it's very interesting. It might have been some famous American that they saw in the photograph.
Ah, well,
or a scene.
So they would, so, you know, if she wants to find the value, she'd, you'd really have to take a look inside and
sure,
have
sure.
a... have a more in-depth look and
exactly.
certainly at the photos,
yeah.
too.
I never do appraisals for official purposes from
without.
Just photographs unless we're doing this hypothetical appraisal where there's already been a loss, it's been stolen, burned, or something, then that might all we have to go on. And in that case, I would do an in-depth interview with the owner and ask lots of questions they might not have thought of before, like telling us, are there photographs? Were there photographs in it at that time?
Dave in Madison, thanks for calling.
Hi. I'm wondering if your guest is familiar with an artist named Dean Meeker, who was a professor, I guess, at the University of Wisconsin in Madison. And he was a sculptor and a painter, and made a number of serigraphs, which are like lithographs. And I bought some. I don't know if they'll ever be worth more than I paid for them, because I like them so much. I'll probably keep buying them. But I was wondering what the upside might be.
Mm-hmm. I have sold and seen them quite a bit around Madison. When I do estate sales, they come up, especially if the individual had really liked art. So I have actually sold a number of them at estate sales, which you have to remember are 2 or 3 or whatever day sales. So we're not like in an art shop where we can wait forever for that customer to come along. And I don't believe any of them went really more than $100 or maybe $120. He does have a name around here, a following, but he's not. His work is not as popular as it once had been.
Okay. There we go. Thanks, Dave. We have an interesting photo on Facebook again, a print from Elizabeth. Elizabeth says, this is a print my grandfather brought back from when he was in Japan fighting in World War II, and, you know, wondering, of course, about the value of it, and, you know, includes some Japanese writing, which I don't know if you read Japanese or not.
I do not read Japanese. However, I have a colleague who does, and I usually call on her if I'm doing an official appraisal and need that. I also have, I've taken a class on Japanese prints, a couple-day class, and the thing is I can't remember all those characters off the top of my head, but I do have materials that I look at and can pretty easily determine if it's one of the well-known Japanese artists from that period if I have my materials with me.
Uh-huh.
Some of these prints, this looks to be in good condition, and depending on the artist and such, they can have a reasonable resale value in, you know, if it's, it can be hundreds into, low thousands, but I really can't say without research on it. It's not one of the most famous images, but it certainly looks of high quality and very crisp, clear colors. So
yeah,
I think it
absolutely.
Probably just has some good value.
Peter in Stoughton, hi. Thank you for calling.
Good afternoon. I'm not looking for an appraisal, but I'm wondering where I might get this item appraised. It's a book with a dust jacket, Illuminated Poems, Allen Ginsberg, Eric Drucker. It's number 38 of 300 copies that were printed by Four Walls, Eight Windows Press, and it is signed by Allen Ginsberg and Eric Drucker, who is an illustrator who's done, well, if nothing else, a few New Yorker covers.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. If that came to me, I would take it to a known rare book dealer. And one of them in our area who has a place, I think, in Janesville right now, Bookworks, is a man called Peter Dast, D-A-S-T.
And G-A-S-T?
D as in dog.
Okay,
D-A-S-T.
All right.
And he's very knowledgeable about rare books.
All right. Well, thank you.
Yeah, sure. That's a book that could be worth something.
Yeah, it is.
For sure. And we wondered, we had a question from Sue who wondered, how can I ask about an appraisal for an inherited kimono? If you had a kimono, where would you go?
Well, I think you could go to a a generalist art and antiques appraiser, or antiques appraiser is what I do. It would fit under the category of textiles. And again, like if you have one of the an appraiser for one of the major organizations, if they don't know, there are certainly other appraisers in their organization that they can consult with that are specialists in that kind of thing. So you're looking at both textiles and what did she say, Japanese?
Yeah.
Arts. And we do regularly assist each other in on specialty items as we're working together on these kind of appraisals.
And where would Gina go to get her dulcimer from 1981 appraised?
Generally speaking, a good music store that also sells used instruments would be able to tell you the value of that. You do want to be careful and be very clear on what value you want, whether it's, you know, they might offer it, well, I would buy it for such and such a value. And a price, and that's not really even the fair market value. What you want is what would they sell it for? So you don't want that person to buy it from you if you just want it appraised. So you want to find out what that would be sold for. You can look for luthier shops, which are the people who make and repair instruments, stringed instruments, and they might also carry used instruments as well.
Boy, we're about out of time in 30 seconds. Is there something that some collectibles that have really increased in value recently?
Well, the advertising world is going kind of wild.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
So advertising. Now print vintage. Advertising or?
The old metal signs, big signs.
Oh, sure.
You know, you see the big flying horse Pegasus on the gasoline sign. That's the one.
Well, always a pleasure, Shirley. Thank you so much. And again, I want to tell people that your website, airappraisal.com, go there or just go to our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You'll get a link there. Her phone number, if you want to reach her that way, 608 area code 241-2615. Hey, we'll look forward to the next visit.
So will I. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you, Shirley. Shirley owns Bauman Auction Services and Heirloom Appraisal and Estate Services. Tomorrow, Neil DeBole joins us. Gosh, I haven't seen him in a while. I'm looking forward to that. We'll talk. He's from Prairie Nursery, of course, and that's our show on Garden Talk tomorrow. Stay with us.